Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk. I'm Dave Williams. It's great to have your company as always. Tech Talk, your regular source of accessible technology news, reviews, interviews, demonstrations, and hopefully information that you can use. We're always keen to get your feedback and we always want to improve the program and hear from you. So why not drop us a line? techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need for any messages, audio or text. So techtalk, that's T-E-C-H, talk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the new Google Reader available on Android. Callum Stoneman will be talking with Blind Square about all things navigation, and we'll be hearing from Paul Porter from the RNIB library team, who will be telling us about some changes they're making to how you may receive your audiobooks. So stay tuned, it's another Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Tasnee Marshad and Callum Stoneman. Good to have you both here. What you got your eye on at the moment, Callum Stoneman?
Well, as you know, it was Christmas recently, and I did pretty well this Christmas. I think we're going to discuss this a bit more later, but I got one of the air fryers that you've been raving on about, Dev.
Is this Mrs. Callum's subtle way of saying you need to do more cooking?
I think it might be, yeah, maybe.
Fantastic. How about you, Tasnee Marshad? What's on your radar?
Well, I'm checking out the new InVision update on the glasses, so I'm kind of exploring that a little bit. So hopefully we'll be able to give you a bit more information later on with a demo.
Thank you very much. Well, looking forward to that. All right, stick around. It's Tech Talk. As blind and partially sighted people, we often are very interested in the many accessible ways we have to read. RNIB, of course, provides many accessible library services. Some of us use Braille, others use large print, and audio, of course, is hugely popular. However, how do you read on your phone? Are you somebody that likes audiobooks? Are you someone that likes to use the screen reader? Well, a recent innovation from Google is the Google Reader on Android. And here to tell us more is Robin Spinks, RNIB's inclusive design lead. Hello, Robin. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, Dave. Pleasure to talk to you.
Are you a big reader yourself?
I do read for pleasure, a little bit when the time allows, but I read a lot for work and just general personal research. So it's really important to me. But as someone with low vision, I often find that traditional approaches to reading can be problematic. So I'm always on the lookout for new tools, particularly new inbuilt tools, which make that whole experience better.
So we have many reading apps, some designed specifically with blind and partially sighted people in mind. I'm thinking of the Dolphin Easy Reader app or VoiceStream Reader, and they're great if you can get that content, you know, directly into those apps. But actually, sometimes it's helpful to have something system-wide because you don't know when you're going to need it.
Absolutely. And in that, that's exactly, in fact, what Google have just done. They've just launched a new feature of the operating system Android. It's come in the latest update that's dropped in the last few days. And it's called Reading Mode. So this has come to Pixel first, as often happens with Android these days. But what will happen for sure is that it will cascade across the entire Android ecosystem in time. So if you've got a Pixel device, you're probably going to get this first, but it will come to other Android devices. And essentially, you know, Android Reader is a little bit like Safari Reader if you're an Apple user. So it's kind of a reading mode that's baked into the operating system. And if you toggle it on in accessibility, what happens is that a little floating button, which you can drag to wherever you want to have it on screen, a little brightly coloured blue button is available. When you touch that button, it will literally turn any long form content or web article that you've got up on screen into a format of your choosing.
Okay, so if I have an Android device, how do I know that I've got this feature? Presumably this is something for newer devices, or is it going to work on older devices as well?
It may do in time. You know, Android's a bit of a complex one in terms of where things actually land and when they land. If you've got a Pixel, any of the Pixel devices, you'll have access to this now. anything newer than a Pixel 4a. And what you could do is you could just go and check which version of Android you've got in system, and find out there. It'll tell you that the name of the Android system that you've got. But yeah, we'll see it filter out to a really broad range of devices over time, but Pixel devices first.
So to benefit from the reading mode for Android, do I have to go into settings to enable this, or is it just going to pop up everywhere?
You do. So you need to go into settings and then accessibility. And what you're looking for is reading mode. And when you toggle that on, the blue, small blue button will appear on your home screen. You can drag that blue button, just touch it and drag it to anywhere that you want to have it on the screen. And essentially what it does is it puts at your fingertips an accessible reading experience that can be helpful for anyone who's blind or low vision or dyslexic. So once you've added it to your phone settings, it'll enable you to customize the reading experience based on your unique needs and tolerances. So, you know, attributes like font type, size, contrast, all of those things, you can set them. So if you like yellow on black, for example, I quite like that. I like white or blue on black as well. I can set that up as my preferred color scheme. And also I can choose the font that's going to work well for me. But even better than that, I can also have text-to-speech preferences as well. So if I'm, as is often the case, I'm reading something but my eyes get a bit tired, I just hit the big triangular-shaped play button, or the play button as anyone would notice it, that'll appear at the bottom of the screen, and it will begin to then simply read out what I have been visually reading. So I've been visually reading an article just while we've been talking, and if I hit the play button,
Google announces new accessible reading mode in special delivery Android update for the holidays.
So I've just paused that, but actually that's reading it to me at 1x. Quite often I tend to read things a bit faster than that, so I might go to 1.25 or 1.5x. I can choose the voice that I'd like to listen to it in, and I can also stop and start the spoken element at my leisure. So if I want to read it using my low vision, I can do that. If I get a bit tired and I want it to be spoken to me, I can just tap that button. So I've been using this for a few weeks now. And in fact, from the day that I was introduced to it, prior to the launch, I've used it every single day. I really find it very helpful.
Do you think it can be a little bit difficult sometimes for users to navigate? There's so many options, aren't there? Because, you know, as a blind guy, I'm using the screen reader, so I'm probably less likely to use a feature like this. But also there are features on iOS. Read screen comes to mind. And then, of course, in Safari, you've got that Safari reader that will reflow the text. And sometimes I think it's a little bit tricky to kind of know which one's right for you. How do we navigate all of this?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Dave. In fact, quite recently, I took part in a webinar for the DAISY Consortium, and I did a sort of, you know, top tips on reading for people with low vision. And it really occurred to me from that session and from the feedback that I got that a lot of this is maybe a bit too complicated for people. So I'm a massive fan of simple solutions. The nice thing about this is I can turn it on, I can have that one button present when I want it, I can touch it and use it. But you're right, I think we need to do more to demystify reading approaches. And you know, let's not forget, a lot of people are kind of like a foot in both camps. They might not necessarily identify as being purely low vision or being blind. They might be somewhere in the middle where they want to use the sight that they've got, but perhaps they find they get tired or they get eye strain. And I think the nice thing that we're seeing here is there's an option that actually allows you to work across both of those areas rather than feel like you have to fit into being a screen reader user or being a magnification or low vision user. And I think we'll see more of that, you know, more flexible solutions that allow people to consume content in ways that they want. Because I think, you know, the joy of reading and the real pleasure of reading is about being able to do it without having undue strain or pressure or discomfort. You don't want to have anything like that. If you do experience that, you probably won't want to go back to it. So any facility that can actually reduce the friction, make it a more enjoyable experience, it's got to be applauded.
Reading mode coming to an Android device near you very soon. Robin Spinks, Head of Inclusive Design at RNIB, thanks very much.
Cheers, Dave. Pleasure.
We often talk about technology in the kitchen here on Tech Talk, and for very good reason, because whether you can use your kitchen tech can make the difference between your ability to prepare a meal or not. Well, if you were listening earlier, you'll remember Callum Stoneman recently got his hands on an air fryer, and regular listeners may remember that, of course, the air fryer was my gadget of 2022. Callum Stoneman, let's compare air fryers then. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. Maybe we just need to back up the truck a little bit, though, and just first explain what is an air fryer?
It's a mini oven, isn't it? And and you can cook it, basically it air fries food rather than cooking it in a conventional way, in a more cost-effective way. And it's kind of miniature desktop version is kind of how I would put it, but it probably does a lot more functions than that.
You're right. It sits on the countertop. There's a drawer into which you put your food. So you pull the drawer out, put your food in there, whatever it is, your chips or your nuggets or whatever you want to cook, and then the sort of the fancier ones have multiple elements. I think mine just has the one element, and then there is a fan in there, so when it's on, you know, you can hear the fan is running, and they're quite efficient. They seem to cook quite quickly. I think that's does that sort of tally with your experience, Callum?
Yeah, that sums it up for me. I think that's mine's quite a fancy one, actually, because mine's got two drawers. Mine's a Foodie Max dual something. So it means it's got two drawers. And the really cool thing about that is that I did, for example, New Year's Day, I did a Sunday dinner. And I had two different things in there. So I had the roast, my roast potatoes in zone one, and my Yorkshires in the second zone. They weren't homemade. You can set the different settings for different zones. So like, let's say, for example, I can't remember the exact instructions. I'm just kind of making these up. But let's say your roast is needed to be at 200 degrees for 30 minutes, but your Yorkshire's only needed to be at 180 degrees for 4 minutes. You can set the different settings on the different zones. It's all really tactile, you know, nice little tactile buttons. I've just put some bump-ons on there so I know which is which. But you set the temperature, you set the time on the individual zones. You then press the sync button, and what that will do is it will time it so that the food in both zones is ready at the same time. So in that example, it would first start zone one cooking. Meanwhile, zone two is counting down from, let's say, 25 minutes, for example. Once the first zone's got 5 minutes left, the second one will start cooking without you having to do anything. You don't have to press anything. It'll just do a little beep. The second one starts, and then 5 minutes later or 4 minutes later, whatever, they're both done at the same time, so you can just put everything in and leave it to do its thing, really.
Sounds amazing, actually, Callum. And I actually looked at a very similar Ninja Foodie. I don't know if it's the same one that you are describing, but it sounds really similar. It was definitely a Ninja brand, and it sounded really complex, to be honest. So I'm really glad that, you know, you've been given one as a present and you're exploring it and saying that it actually is very accessible. So that kind of puts my mind at rest that actually the Ninja brand can be and is accessible for people with sight loss. I'm just wondering, because the Ninja brand's quite a high-end brand, isn't it? So it might not be in everyone's budget, actually. So that's something to be mindful about. But yeah, it sounds like a really good multifunctional air fryer.
So my air fryer is, I think, a little bit more kind of cheap and cheerful than Callum's. You've got a fancy multi-zone thing going on there. I'd have just the one drawer. So I've got the Tower 17071, and I think it cost about £70. And it has two dials on the top, which are quite tactile. You could, of course, put a bump on there if you wanted to indicate a particular temperature. And then the timer is actually an old school mechanical timer, a bit like an alarm clock. So you get a slightly disturbing ticking sound and then a little kind of alarm at the end when it stops. And you could, of course, just ignore that and turn it all the way around and then use a separate timer, maybe on your smart speaker or something like that. So they're really efficient. They work quite well. We don't use the oven so much now. You know, the food that comes out there is properly cooked. You know, very versatile. You can make a cake or whatever. How do you get your stuff out, Callum? Because that's I think, the little kind of tricky part, because obviously you've got a hot drawer and your food is kind of sitting in the bottom of that drawer. So when you pull it out, you've got this sort of hot metal thing, and you either need to kind of get in there with some sort of utensil or, you know, maybe a glove or something like that. How do you get your Yorkshire puddings out your air fryer drawer, if that's not too personal a question?
Yeah, you're right. When you pull the drawer out, on mine at least, the outside of the drawer overall is pretty cool to the touch. You know, that the handle where you pull it out doesn't seem to get very hot. I mean, you're right, the metal bit at the side and, you know, inside is quite hot. But I find mine relatively easy to just pull out, put the drawer on the side next to the air fryer. And then I just usually use just an oven glove, to be honest, depending on what I'm getting out. Like you said, you can either use a utensil, or in my case, if I'm cooking something that's easy enough to pick up, I'll just put an oven glove on and just kind of reach in there and pick it up. It's kind of just depends on, you know, planning, really. So I'll make sure that there's a plate or a tray or whatever I need to put the food on next to me, so then I can just sort of quickly pick it up and put it, you know, where it needs to go, really.
They're quite good to clean as well, because you can take the drawer to the sink, of course, and then you can run your water and wipe out the drawer. So I find they're quite easy to clean. On that point, though, Callum, where you're putting your sort of hot drawer down on the surface, it's worth pointing out that some kitchen services, they don't recommend that you put hot pans and things like that directly onto the surface. So it might be worth having a board or something else to put that on. Righto. So let us know. Have you got an air fryer? Have you thought about getting an air fryer? Would you like to try one? Or any other kitchen tech? Do let us know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk for all your technology thoughts. You can, of course, send us a voice message as well. We'd love to get your voice on air. Callum Stoneman, good luck with your air fryer. It sounds like you're going to be a bit busier.
One of the topics that comes up regularly here on Tech Talk is navigation and the apps that we can use to navigate out and about independently. Last month, Microsoft announced that they were ending support for their navigation app Soundscape. So as of now, the app has been removed from the App Store, and if you had Soundscape, you can continue to use it until the 30th of June, at which point it will then stop working. If you don't have Soundscape and you were thinking of getting it, then you won't be able to get it anymore. It's not on the App Store anymore. And they have actually open sourced the code, which is interesting, because rather than just kind of dropping it and saying this is no longer available, they've opened it up. And I guess their thinking there is that other developers could take this on and potentially work with it. And joining me now to discuss this in more detail, because I'm not a developer, so we thought let's get someone in who knows what they're talking about. And joining me now is Ilka, the developer of Blind Square. Hey, Ilka, how's it going?
Hey, it's great, and nice to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us. So do you want to just, we'll come on to Soundscape in a bit, but do you want to just start by telling us a bit about yourself and a bit about Blind Square?
Yeah, so I'm Ilka, located in Helsinki, Finland, and I created Blind Square application about 10 years ago. And at that time, I was one of the first ones to start using smartphone this way and realize that we do have a GPS, we have a open data, we have speech synthesizers. And just to kind of give an idea how it was different, for example, Apple didn't provide text to speech to the application to do background speaking. So I had to use a cappella sounds and voices at that time. And now we have also Apple text-to-speech, so it is simpler to do this kind of stuff. But yeah, I started 10 years ago and I have created a product that has 26 languages. It is used in 180 countries. I have 60,000 users and a really nice community around it and supporting what I'm doing. So I do it based on the user feedback and a lot of fans also. So it is nice to kind of invent new things around this area.
So you mentioned that Blind Square was one of like the first apps to kind of do this. And it must have been an interesting journey on this because we've got the GPS, we've got, you know, Apple Maps and Google Maps are perfectly accessible. But we as blind people, we need more than just the sort of turn left, turn right. This coffee shop is on your left. We need more context than that. So is there a big challenge in that, you know, develop that kind of taking that map data and that GPS data and translating it into, I guess, blind friendly directions?
Yeah, I guess that was the first realizations I learned when I started to implement navigational application for the blind. It doesn't need to be taking you from A to B, turn left, turn right. It's more like describing your environment. So while you are walking, tell about next intersections. And we sighted people, I would say that we see signs around us. There is a McDonald's, there is post office, etc. So we kind of build a map of our surroundings. If it's something that you actually know the place, you still kind of rely on seeing signs. I want to make those signs also something that blind person can hear them. And then I started to describe post office 30 meters, 3 o'clock, McDonald's straight ahead, 60 meters, etc. So I think it is very different. And from my users, I have learned that even in a places that you know, you can keep Blind Square just running and informing about intersections and places, etc. So you know where you are and where you are heading. So it's not navigating from A to B, but just something you run on the background and you keep your phone in a pocket and just listen. And when I'm doing this description, it's important to realize that I can't speak too much. So I have subtle tones that means that this is intersection. I don't say intersection, but tone means something, and then other tone means something, etc. And something I'm adding soon to the Blind Square is really new obstacles. So it has a sound, and then you hear steps 5 meters straight ahead. So I think sounds are important, but you can't give too much sounds at the same time.
Yeah, it must be a hard balance to get right, I suppose, you know, because I've used Blind Square and the amount of things you can customize in terms of what you hear around you, what you don't hear, things that get called out, things that don't get called out, the different tones. I guess that sort of thing has been added over time where, you know, some people might say, well, I want to know everything that's around me. And then others might say, well, I just want to know where the nearest restaurant is. I don't care about bus stops and post offices and stuff. So there's a way to filter all that out. And the thing that I find the most impressive with Soundscape, and this, I want to ask you how difficult this was to get right. When I use it, it will give you directions based on the clock face, you know, so it might say McDonald's 50 meters at 5 o'clock or at 12 o'clock. With the hit and miss nature of GPS, how difficult was that to implement?
The most often use case is you have a phone in a pocket, so we can't rely compass. So we need to rely on the GPS updates. And what it means that it's the more accurate it is, the faster you are walking. So you can do some filtering to filter errors. And of course, winter time, it might be not so good because GPS is not so accurate at winter time, or if it's cloudy, or if there are high buildings. So it is a lot of optimization you need to do in a background. And for example, in background, in Blind Square, I know the accuracy, how much I trust at the moment. And then information is based on that. And about the soundscape, I think they do have really, really neat feature there that many likes. That Blind Square is not doing today is they use Apple's 3D sound, so it can even mention the place from the direction where it is. So Blind Square still is always saying 3 o'clock or slightly to the right. But Soundscape has this neat feature. And let's hope that it doesn't go away if Soundscape is going away.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, coming back to this whole topic of Soundscape, I know it's quite early days, but have you managed to kind of study the bits of the code that they have open sourced? And I guess for another developer such as yourself to take this on, how feasible is it from your knowledge of it, and how likely do you think it is that it could happen?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you, Microsoft, for releasing this as an open source. So they have been doing this more than 6 years. Blind Square is 10 years old. And I have briefly studied the code. And first of all, quality of the code, it is excellent. So it's kind of easy to understand. And it was funny to see features that Blind Square has had, how they did implement the same features, and they did use the same algorithm, and in some cases, oh, they did it like this, maybe I can do my app better with this idea. So it is super interesting, and I have studied it through, but when it comes to the question, can someone just copy the code and start running it? And the short answer is no, because application itself, code is open sourced, but they say there that not all data has been included there. So there is some licensing or some issues that they can't provide code for all the data that they have had. And when I studied a bit more, they do have a back-end utilities, the backend services that you can start running your own. So you buy resources from Azure to host some databases and servers and run some code. But only data left, what I have seen, is OpenStreetMap. So you need to host your OpenStreetMap server to get data. And to my knowledge, Soundscape has been a lot of Bing Maps. And Bing Maps seems not to be included there. And I kind of understand, because Bing Maps, it's not provided as an API that you can purchase. So it has been a Microsoft thing. So that is not available there. And then the question is OpenStreetMap data enough for providing this kind of service? It might not be. So you need something else also.
That's interesting. I guess the short answer then is that you couldn't just take this and compile it and run it and have your own version of Soundscape. But are there certain parts that could be used? You know, say, for example, I know it's early days and you might not want to comment on Blind Square specifically, but just as an example, you know, say you wanted to kind of go, well, I like the way that they've done audio beacons, so I want to bring that into Blind Square. Is that sort of thing possible with what we've got?
Yes, and certainly I have tested same things. I haven't released any versions with the 3D sound, but certainly I have tried that earlier, and also asked, would that this be a nice feature? And then we know that someone would like that, and not all likes that. So I have also asked from current users, what are the most important features they find from Soundscape and what they would like to have in Blind Square, and their answers are most often rich description of intersections, and then maybe the second is it is nice when it announces place in a 3D space. And I have looked at code, it is clean, it is nice, maybe something I could offer as an option. So it is something that I'm considering at least.
And before we started recording this, we were, you know, when we were chatting via email to kind of sort this interview out, you mentioned that Soundscape, where you're based in Finland, has never been available. So as we've established, you couldn't really recreate full-blown Soundscape, but this could kind of bring in certain parts of Soundscape to an audience that had never previously had access to it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's true. And then I think it's we get back into the data. Which data is available? And actually, last year, I haven't been publishing a lot to the Blind Square, but I have been investing heavily to OpenStreetMap. And OpenStreetMap itself, it doesn't have too much things that support this kind of application. I give an example. It doesn't have categorization. And we need categorization. We need to know which ones are restaurants, which type of restaurants. We need to know which are services, which kind of services, shopping malls, etc., etc., etc. And I have made a system that I can create that kind of categorization to OpenStreetMap. And also I can create point of interests of the things that are not poised in OSM. For example, it can be a park, which is not poised, but there is a fence surrounding it that actually says that this is a park. And I create point of interest of that. I create poise also of the traffic lights that have sound, makes possible to find nearest the traffic crossing, etc. And I also bring information of the intersections with the direction where the streets are going, also streets without name. So you are in the middle of the forest and you can then hear that there is a narrow path, gravel path, 2 o'clock. So that rich information can be driven nicely from OpenStreetMap. And I haven't released anything yet, but I would say that data part on top of OSM needs some kind of richer analytics, and luckily I have been doing that last year.
Yeah, so there's definitely interesting work going on, and I suppose this one with Soundscape is still one to watch, really. I suppose it's certainly something to keep an eye on by the sounds of it.
Yeah, if you think should you take just Soundscape's code and start doing something on top of that, someone could do that, but I can say that then where to find the data, it will be one problem probably. For me, I think it makes sense to find out which features have been implemented better there and then improve what I already have and maybe bring some new features. So that's my thinking, how developer could do. And that anyone doing apps in this area could take a look of the code and find out how did they implement this and how to improve my own system.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going to learn and try and get improvements from anyone, it's going to be someone like Microsoft, isn't it? If people are kind of, because Soundscape is going to be completely going away soon, and if people are looking at alternatives and considering Blind Square, are you aware of any similarities between the two? You know, where could people get started to kind of make that switch?
Yeah, I think one aspect when I've been asking questions and why someone would have used Soundscape is the fact that Blind Square is 10 years old. Its user interface is basically 10 years back. I would say it is super simple if you just run it, put it in your pocket and listen. So it is that way, it is easy. But then when you need to start doing filtering, I don't want to hear that, etc. It is maybe too complex. So I need to do some simplifications there, of course. I think bringing obstacles, it will be interesting add-on that no application is doing today. So hear about stairs just a couple meters ahead, and or hearing about a bollard that's in the middle of the walking path, or a tree in the middle of the walking path. So that is interesting. And intersection description. So I will be working now with my rich data from the OSM, with the information, not only the streets where they are going, but also if it's for walking or bicycle or cars, if it's tarmac or gravel, what's the width of the street, all this kind of information, bringing that into Blind Square and give rich descriptions like Soundscape have had.
Yeah, and I must admit, I've gone back to Blind Square now for following this news, and the obstacle detection, I can't wait for, personally. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you have any kind of rough time frame on that by any chance?
Obstacles, it's now in a beta, and feedback has been kind of, it's amazing. And also, I always want to hear if it's not working for you. And then I hear, you don't need to mention about buses or so I do have too much information now, so I need to limit. And you asked about data, how I have done my system. It is reading daily whole planet. So all the information around the world is daily updated, and it will be available then globally in every country. So that's maybe difference with Blind Square. So whenever I do something, I find data sources that are global. And if they are not available, I create them. And last year, I have been creating this OSM data.
Really interesting stuff. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And keep in touch as well when these features are released to have to get you back on and discuss them in more detail.
Yes, I am happy to.
Okay, Ilkka, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
We've had an email from Gordon Anthony. Thank you very much, Gordon, for getting in touch with us here at Tech Talk. Gordon has really taken to Mastodon, and he started off using the MetaText app on iOS, but has pointed out that this app is not likely to be continued owing to the app's author experiencing health issues. So he's recommending Toot, T-O-O-T, for iOS. And he says it's a little bit more difficult to use, but once you get the hang of it, it's all right. And Gordon says he's following Callum Stoneman. How about that, Callum? You've got a follower.
He is, yeah. Thanks thanks for the follow, Gordon. And good points as well about the apps. MetaText was the one that I demoed a couple of months ago, because I've been really liking that app. But yeah, I didn't know that about the developer no longer kind of maintaining it. So all the best to them. It's easy to forget sometimes, isn't it, that a lot of these apps that we use and a lot of these programs, they're just one person.
But here's the big question, Callum. Have you stuck with Mastodon, or did you just sort of dabble and you've kind of parked it up and gone back to Twitter?
I'm still kind of hanging around. I haven't posted much, admittedly, but I do go on there and have a flick through every now and again. It is quite nice, to be fair, the amount of customization you can do. It is quite nice not having promoted tweets and ads and all that kind of junk shoved in your face, to be fair. It is.
Yeah, Gordon says that's the thing he really likes about it, that actually no adverts, and you just find some hashtags that you want to follow, and actually it's a really good experience for him.
Yeah, so thanks for that email. I will give Toot a try as well.
We've had an email from Colin Shales, who of course has appeared on the programme previously from our Technology for Life team here at RNIB. And Colin writes to us about recycling old technology. And he said he's got about 20 years worth of old tech that he needed to get rid of. And one of the things that put him off with the recycling was the need to take it to a local refuse centre. And what Colin points out is that actually many high street shops will take old tech and recycle it for you. So maybe worth asking on the high street. And of course, the other thing you can do is repurpose that old tech for friends and family members. Maybe use an old phone as a dedicated media player or a device to control the central heating. Callum, what do you do with your old gadgets?
I tend to, as you said, I tend to give them to friends and family. I mean, my parents, for example, they're not bothered about the latest and greatest phones. They just want a phone to maybe do some kind of really basic social media, you know, have a flick through Facebook, and then it's, you know, make calls, send texts, take photos. They're not bothered about all the fancy features. So once we've got no use for a phone, I'll just either give it to friends or family if they want it, or to be honest, I tend to just sell them on, really, you know, use something like eBay, or as Colin points out there, some of these high street retailers, a lot of the time you can do trade-in deals as well, you know, so you could trade in an iPhone and get, you know, a discount on a new one or a gift card or something like that. and they will take care of the recycling as well.
Colin also suggests perhaps checking in with your local sight loss organisation that they might be able to make use of your old tech for training purposes. How about you, Tasneem Arshad? What do you do with your old tech? Do you just stick it in the wheelie bin?
No, not really. That wouldn't be very helpful, would it? Similar to Callum. So yeah, friends, family, and trading. So I've done the trading with iPhones before. I found that quite a helpful option. But yeah, it's always good to have options so you can decide. But I think family and friends is a good port of call because, you know, some of them are not really into technology and very happy with older models.
And of course, that high street option, you know, just popping into, you know, Currys or a mobile phone shop, it might be that they will also take some old tech off your hands. Let us know how you dispose of or recycle your old technology. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, I'm sure you are aware that RNIB's library has a huge collection of Braille and audio content that is completely free to borrow for people who are blind or partially sighted living in the UK. As well as digital download, the content is also available through your smart speaker and available through the post on physical media, such as CD. Now, the library has recently announced some changes to the CD delivery system, and here to help us understand what that means for you is RNIB's Digital Transformation Manager. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Paul Porter. Good to have you with us.
Hi Dave, yeah, it's great to be back again. It's been a little while, but I always enjoy coming on the show.
Thank you so much. So just tell us a little bit, Paul. It's intriguing, isn't it, that some folk actually are not across all this downloading. Some people still want to receive physical media, USB sticks and even CDs in the post.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, what I would say to listeners is that, you know, give a digital download a try, give a smart speaker skill a try. Because at the end of the day, you can choose what you want to read, when you want to read it. If you download a book and you don't like it, you can just delete it and try something else. But we still have a lot of people accessing our books through the traditional postal method, where you give RNIB a list of books and CDs are sent to you. And once you're finished listening to the CD, you send it back and the next book on the list is sent to you, and so on. And we've been using this method for about 22 years, but you know, things change, and recently there's been issues with the postal service and people not receiving books in a timely fashion. So we've decided to make a slight change, but we think it will benefit everyone who's still using the CD service. So from the 9th of January, when you receive a book, you'll no longer need to return it to us to receive your next book. We'll look at your frequency of how often you get a book at the moment, and we'll send out books automatically. So if you get at the moment, say, 2 books a week, you'll continue to get 2 books a week. If it's 6 books a week, you'll get 6 books a week. If you think I'm getting too many or not enough, you can contact the RNIB helpline and they'll be able to change the frequency as to how often you get a book on CD. The CDs that you get from RNIB will continue to come in the same type of packaging. The CD has your address on it. And normally, of course, you would have to take it back to the post office and send it off, and then you get your next book. And some people found that difficult. So we are saying to customers now that you can, once you receive your book, you can keep that CD for as long as you want. You can recycle it. You will be able to send it back to RNIB and we'll recycle it on your behalf, but that, as I say, won't affect how often you receive CDs. The only thing we say you mustn't do with it due to copyright issues is, you know, pass it on to someone else. But in all other respects, you know, the service is exactly the same. We're adding lots of books every month to the collection. We've got around about 38,000 books at the moment available.
So quite a lot of information to take in there, Paul. I think the most important thing to emphasise initially is that the CD service is not going away. For those readers who prefer to receive books on CD, that will continue to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're committed to still making books physically available on media. You know, it's interesting because I think those of us who grew up with cassettes, you know, and then CDs came along, and now, you know, because of digital and music on demand, you know, CDs aren't as popular as they used to be, but certainly for talking books, they're not going away anytime soon. It might be that eventually, you know, everyone is downloading books digitally or listening to them on their smart speaker. But until that happens, we're very committed to making CDs available. It is a slight change where we're, you know, asking people not to necessarily return the CDs. But we think it will make a difference because people will get books on a more sort of regular basis, and not having, you know, you don't have to return them to then get your next book sent to you. So we think it's a change for the better. And as I say, you will be able to change the frequency of how often you get a book if you find you're not getting enough or you're getting too many. So, you know, the amount of books that you read in a week and a month is still in your hands. And, you know, with a quick call, you'll be able to change that the frequency as to how often you get a book.
Right. So if you were going away on holiday, for example, and you didn't want those CDs piling up behind the door while you're away, then obviously let the helpline know and we can pause the service.
Absolutely, yep. So, you know, as I say, the amount of books you read is still in your hands. And once you've got the CDs, you can keep them or you can recycle them. In case customers aren't aware, you know, when you send a CD back to us now, we send it off for recycling in any case. So if you recycle it yourself, or, you know, you can still send it back in the packaging and it will be recycled.
So can you put CDs in your regular recycling then, or does that vary a bit depending on where you live?
I think it will probably vary. You probably can, but I would check with your local council just to make sure.
Okay, so short version is you no longer need to return audiobooks sent out on CD from RNIB's library. Check with your council to make sure that you are able to recycle that in the appropriate way. You're asked not to share the CD with anyone else. So that's actually different from the Braille service, Paul, isn't it? Because with the Braille, we have said that you can pass the Braille on to another reader if you want to.
That's right. With the Braille on demand, where, you know, Braille is printed out and sent to you in a number of volumes, you can pass that on, recycle and so on. But with the audio books, a lot of our books are produced by publishers themselves rather than being recorded by RNIB. So they obviously have a vested interest in making sure that only people who are eligible can listen to the books. Often books are, in many cases, donated to RNIB by publishers. In some cases, we do buy them. But a lot of the big publishing houses, you know, very kindly give us their books, audio books, for free. And they've also given us their back catalogues, which in many cases, you know, can be thousands of books. So, you know, if people were found to be passing the CDs on, publishers could quite, you know, easily say, well, we're not giving you any more books. So it's in everyone's interest to you know, keep the CDs for yourself and not pass them on.
Well, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate all the hard work everyone does in the Talking Book service. We know it's one of the crown jewels of RNIB, a much-loved service, those Talking Books valued by readers up and down the country. Thank you so much for all you do to continue that great work. Just a final question, Paul. If there is a particular book that readers would like added to the library, what's the best way to make that request? We can't guarantee, of course, but if enough people ask for a book, then maybe it'll get added to a list somewhere. What's the way we do that?
Absolutely. So you can contact the helpline and give your information that way. You can email readingservices@rnib.org.uk. But the great thing, I think, now, Dave, is that, you know, audiobooks is such a big business that any of the big blockbusters that come out will usually be producing audio at the same time as the print version, and we will often get access to that, you know, book at the same time as well. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to wait 6 months or a year till books are available. So, you know, the provision of audio is getting much better. RNIB, of course, still we still produce you know, our own talking books as well. And in some cases, actually, you know, we have reciprocal arrangements with publishers, and, you know, they have access to our books as well. So, you know, it's a win-win situation for everyone. But, you know, it is a fact that we've gone from, you know, a few thousand books maybe 10 years ago to, as I say, 38,000. And, you know, we're adding several hundred books a month to the collection. So really exciting. And, you know, we hope everyone enjoys accessing their audiobook in whichever format they find the easiest way.
Righto. And obviously, if readers really are at the end of their tethers with waiting for the postal service, then it may be worth trying out some of those digital download options. And of course, Reading Services and our Technology for Life team can help with all of that. Paul Porter, Digital Transformation Manager from RNIB's Reading Services, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure as always.
That's it for Tech Talk this time. Do tune in next week when we'll be catching up with our Technology for Life team. We'll be learning about what's happening in Northern Ireland, and we'll also be hearing from Madeline about push-button smartphones. But from myself, Dave Williams, and Callum Stoneman, and Tasni Marshad, thanks both.
Thank you, and see you soon.
Thank you. Same time next week.
And the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.